Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the after show. We are recording on Thursday, October 30th, Halloween Eve 2014. And I'm your host this evening, Kelly Gamont. With me, I have the lovely and talented Mike Rose.
Good evening, Kelly.
And I'm going to start, since it's almost Halloween, I'm going to start with a particularly vivid memory I have of Halloween. And that is Halloween 1999, the first time I ever got on a plane to attend a concert. I went and saw the Pet Shop Boys with my then boyfriend, now promoted to husband, Mr. Kelly, and my two dearest friends. And we went and saw the Pet Shop Boys at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas on Halloween night. And when we were done with the show, we went to the Tropicana, I believe it was, and took advantage of their super cheap seafood buffet. And while we were wailing on shrimp cocktail as though it were going out of style, we saw a couple of people go by in interesting costumes and went, wow, that guy in that giant hat with the cane and the platform shoes and the bell-bottom suit, that's quite a look, so he must be a pimp. And then a few minutes later, we see another couple go by, and they are dressed similarly, and we thought, well, that's going to be an awkward Halloween party. And it turned out, according to our cab driver, later when we were, once we'd had our way with the buffet, we were leaving, and we were told that it was the Pimp and Ho Ball going on at the Tropicana, and it was being hosted by Mini-Me. So,
welcome to the after show, everybody.
Yeah, right out the gate. But the important part is that it was a Pet Shop Boys concert, and it was an amazing concert. And the only other time I ever got on a plane to attend a concert, it was to go see George Michael. So, in case there was anybody out there wondering, Kelly is apparently a gay man. So, there you go.
And speak, great transition, by the way, to the big news of the day.
I didn't mean to end up there, but here we are.
Well, I should mention, you know, last time we talked, I was just about to start my big week in San Francisco for Dreamforce, which included not one, but two simultaneous concerts.
Oh, my.
At our big gala. And the bands that were playing at the simultaneous concerts that were adjacent to each other, one outdoors and one indoors, the outdoors one, of course, Bruno Mars.
Nice.
The indoors one, Cake.
Nice!
And it was my brother's birthday, and he got to choose which band we were going to as a group. So we went to see Cake. And the thing is, and so, number one, I don't know who sings it better, unfortunately. Bruno Mars or Kelly, Locked Out of Heaven. We will find out eventually, but I don't know yet. But the thing is that going to see Cake at a corporate show, where the band, I think, was quite surprised that at a corporate show, they were faced with an audience of people who were really excited to see Cake.
I would have been totally excited to see Cake. That would have been amazing.
You have a choice of being like one of the, you know, 40,000 people outside at the Civic Center watching Bruno Mars, or be one of the 3,000 people inside watching Cake. And the 3,000 people who came inside to see Cake really wanted to see Cake.
That's awesome.
They all came. They're like, we screw it. We're going to go see Cake. That's what we're doing. It was great. They were awesome. exactly what I would have expected if I had never seen a picture of the lead singer of Cake, but, you know, big beard and trucker hat.
Yeah, John McCray looks exactly like he sounds.
He looks exactly like what you would expect.
He totally does. And so this does, of course, beg the question of you, Mike. How do you afford your rock and roll lifestyle?
It's not easy. Apparently, the answer is sheep go to heaven. Or possibly I just have a long jacket. Anyway, no.
Mike's short skirt is a topic for another show.
That's the after show. That's the pre-show. As you mentioned, your identity as a music fan, we had a big and somewhat unexpected reveal this morning in the pages of Bloomberg Businessweek.
Right, which, to be fair, is from the source. This is not somebody commenting on or anything like that, which is what we've had in the past. Other people sort of going, well, everybody knows this, so we can talk about it, right? No, people didn't officially know in the public out in the world. And I'm sorry, but if it surprises you that Tim Cook is gay, then you clearly were not paying attention during the iPad event when he mentioned the Apple Watch and said that it was enthusiastically, he was getting an enthusiastic response from people who, and I quote, know even more about fashion than I do.
Well, I think he was being ironic.
Because
he doesn't know very much about fashion. I think that was his point. But yes, it was pretty funny.
But then he made that face and like pointed and was like, you see what I did there. And yes, Tim, I do.
So yes, Tim Cook officially out as a gay man, which, you know, as you said, Kelly, not news in the sense of this is surprising. Mm-hmm. As some similar revelations might have been, this is easily for the past 4 years has been an unspoken or often loudly spoken fact. I think he made the Outweek's, you know, 50 most influential gay people last year. And very recently there was the CNBC incident where one of the panelists on the program said, well, you know, Tim Cook's pretty public about his sexuality. And like, there's dead silence.
And they're all like,
someone's like, no, Fred. No, he's not.
No, sweetie, no.
But Cook has been much more active in or visible in his activism over the past few months. He received an award in Alabama and took the opportunity to address the state's less than stellar record.
Like a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Very, very recently.
Yeah.
Within the past weeks. He was a very visible presence at the Apple Pride event.
I think he's been easing into this.
He has.
With exactly those moments.
And despite the 0.2 from the Russian judge, there's a piece over at BuzzFeed talking about the reactions of a Russian member of parliament to the announcement. You know, so far, obviously, we're less than 24 hours. As we record this, we're less than 24 hours past it. But I have yet to see anything. The worst responses or the harsh responses maybe have been, yes, so what?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, well, you know, isn't this pretty awesome that he felt that he was able to do this, and specifically why he felt he was able to do it, because it was more important for him to potentially serve as an example than it was to remain closeted.
Yeah, and I really liked that was the stand that he took. It was one of the things that I noted in the article. I pulled it up so I can make sure I get the wording right. And this was a thing that I thought was really nice. And it's not necessarily limited to gay people. He said, and I quote from the piece, "If hearing that the CEO of Apple is gay can help someone struggling come to terms with who he or she is, or bring comfort to anyone who feels alone, or inspire people to insist on their equality, then it's worth the trade-off with my own privacy." Mm-hmm. And I say that as a person who, in some fashion, is a minority in tech because I have indoor plumbing. And it would have been really nice when I was growing up to have somebody like Marissa Mayer running something then, you know, somebody that I could look up to and not just sort of go, well, maybe someday someone like me will get to be in charge of things. And it was really, so I totally get where he's coming from. And it's really nice that there are people now. It's sad that there has to be commentary about this, and that I'm sure in a number of places there's going to be a whole discussion. But what I really, really liked about how he put this together was at the end, in typical Tim Cook charm, he wraps the whole thing up by saying, "When I arrive in my office each morning, I'm greeted by framed photos of Dr. King and Robert F. Kennedy. I don't pretend that writing this puts me in their league. All it does is allow me to look at those pictures and know that I'm doing my part, however small, to help others. We pave the sunlight path toward justice together, brick by brick. This is my brick."
Yeah, the sunlit path. I like that. Paving the sunlit path toward justice.
So good.
Which follows the last line of the previous paragraph, which I actually missed the first time I read it, which, you know, he talks about...
Tim's roots are showing.
Yeah, we'll continue to fight for our values. I believe that any CEO of this incredible company, regardless of race, gender, or sexual orientation, would do the same. And I will personally continue to advocate for equality for all people until my toes point up.
Which is a loved that.
Yeah, that's you know, country strong. But I like the way he characterized himself. I'm an engineer, an mm-hmm. uncle, a nature lover, a fitness nut, a son of the South, a sports fanatic, and many other things. I hope that people will respect my desire to focus on the things I'm best suited for and the work that brings me joy. I think if this were a piece that he had written 3 years ago or 4 years ago, it would have been easier to call it a very brave move. I think now it is a principled statement.
Yes.
And that it's one where he is making the case that he is doing this to a degree reluctantly,
mm-hmm.
but he's doing it because he feels that this is more important, that being a public figure is more important in this regard. And I think, if he doesn't consider himself an activist, that's fine. But he is the CEO of the most valuable company in the world.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a big deal. It will be great that one day mm-hmm. it won't be a big deal.
Right.
But for the moment, it's a big deal.
And I think for me, like, Tim Cook being gay isn't the big deal here. It's that the CEO of Apple, a company on a worldwide scale, not a Fortune 500, not a Fortune 100, like a Fortune 5 company. <Yes.
laughs> You left out the 100. No, I meant 5.
No, I meant 5. The CEO of that company is gay. And I think that is a really big deal. Like, Tim and whatever, totally fine. I think the best reaction I saw today was from Philip Elmer DeWitt, who said, so Tim Cook's gay. When does he have time to have sex?
Yikes. Well, when does any CEO have time?
Right?
Truly.
Yeah. But I love, like, I really liked how he put it out there and was like, and he almost was saying, like, can we get back to the stuff that we're doing now? Like, you know, I'm kind of busy.
Well, my favorite two responses, one was on Twitter, which was from Fake Johnny Ive saying, you know, 6 months from now, CEO of Samsung announces that he's gay. And then the other was
parody from, accounts are beautiful.
My friend John on Facebook, who responded saying, now, of course, every Apple fanatic is going to have to do the same, is going to have to do the same thing. It's like, no, this is great. This is what we wanted. It's magical. It's magical and revolutionary.
Now can we bring back the 6-color rainbow logo?
Please.
Please.
Please. Come on.
I'm starting that timer. I'm starting
it. San Francisco Giants won the World Series. Tim Cook came out. It's time for the frickin' 6-color logo.
Please.
Please, we're begging
you.
I loved it.
So
we would even pay you with our phones for the 6-color logo. Yeah,
that
boy.
Sounds suspiciously like a segue. What you mean is as long as we're not shopping at Rite Aid, right?
Well, yeah, but who goes there anymore?
Nobody.
They're so consumer hostile. So yeah, it's been a bit of a week, with regard to that. So Apple Pay, you know, Kelly, you had a piece this week over at TMO.
Yes.
Where you talked about the value proposition of Apple Pay, why how it works matters.
Mm-hmm. And the big thing for me was breach fatigue, is what I called it. I'm particularly proud of that phrase.
Which is the name of my...
it is the name of my suicidal tendencies, Tooth and Throat singing cover band.
Not bad. I was gonna go with Depeche Mode acapella cover band.
Also good. So here's the reason that to me, Apple Pay has a lot of appeal. I used to be a person who prided myself on knowing my credit card number. I knew the whole thing. If you asked me for my credit card number on the phone because I'm ordering food or whatever, I can give it to you and I can enter it if I'm making a payment on something without having to look. If I don't have a password manager, you know, filling that information in for me. So the thing that has really frustrated me about this is I'm not that person anymore. And the reason for that is because in the last 12 months, I've had 4 credit card numbers. Because somebody gets breached, and then I get a letter in the mail that has 2 new credit cards in it. And I find this endlessly frustrating. And the reason that this is really aggravating for me personally is because I took all the stuff seriously that my mom told me about. Like growing up, when you learn a little bit about managing money and, you know, like someday when you get your own plastic and that kind of thing. And I took all that stuff seriously about how people will take your credit card and they will use it, you know, if you don't cut it into itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dotted pieces. And all of the other stuff you have to do, you know, like upgrade to the industrial strength crosscut shredder so that people can't put anything together again and, you know, be really vigilant about shredding those receipts and always make sure that you get the receipt if there is one so that it's not left there on accident for someone else. I do all of the stuff that I'm supposed to do to keep my data safe, and yet I've had 4 credit card numbers in the last year and none of those situations were things that were my fault. Like all I did was shop somewhere, which should not have been an issue. And so I am endlessly frustrated by this whole thing. And it just really aggravates me that I have to keep getting a new credit card number every few months. So the thing that I'm really excited about with Apple Pay is that Apple Pay, first of all, doesn't store your credit card number on your device. It stores a credit card number. That credit card number is generated in such a way that it is not legitimate for anything else. The only way it's legitimate is if it comes from your phone's secure element, because right now we're talking about 6 and 6 Plus. It comes from your phone's secure element, and it has this second piece, which is this token that is generated on the fly for the transaction, which includes transaction-specific information. So both of those things have to be in place in order for the process to happen. So even if someone were snooping and able to get your credit card number, the credit card number that they get is no good to them because
it's useless. Useless, I say.
So the way I described it was, it's like having Kleenex credit cards. Like you have it and you use it one time and then it is useless for anybody else after you're done. That's it. And this is awesome. And I found this really great article by Kirk Lennon who talked about all of the problems with the Stripe and why it is that we're moving to the chip and sign system. We would do chip and pin like the rest of the world, but part of the problem with that is that you are supposed to put your card into an ATM and choose your pin yourself so that you are the only person who ever knows it. But in order for the ATM to be able to write the information to the chip, which is how all of that works in the rest of the world, basically, every ATM in the United States would need to be upgraded, and that just wasn't a possibility. So that's why we get chip and sign. Maybe someday we'll get chip and pin, but for right now, it's chip and sign. And the evolution of that payment system and what it is about Apple Pay that makes it useful, all of those things make me so much happier because there is a good chance that maybe my credit card information won't get swiped again as long as I'm not swiping a card. So I'm looking forward to it. But apparently, I'm one of the few people who's excited about it because there's a big bunch of people who are really not excited about Apple Pay.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys. So MCX, Merchant Customer Exchange, which is really cute that they have customer in the title, basically, what they want to do is nuke credit card fees from low Earth orbit. I think that this is hilarious because it's probably not going to change. And so what they did was all of these companies in like 2012 signed agreements with MCX that they would become MCX payment acceptors, basically. They wanted to be part of this system. And that system is called Currency, which may sound familiar to some of you playing along at home. Currency is an app that you put on your phone, and then you use it to scan a QR code at the register, and that's how you pay for stuff. But you can only pay for stuff by hooking this app on your phone directly to your bank account, number one. And number two, in order to sign up for Currency, you have to submit to them your social security number and some driver's license information.
What? Whoa, hold on a second. What?
Uh-huh.
That's crazy.
And here, no, no, we're not too crazy yet. That's the first part. Now, the next part is that this system doesn't launch until next year, sometime next year. So it could be a year from now.
Pilot. It's in pilot in, I want to say, Milwaukee.
Very limited pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few folks using it.
But it will not be wide until at some point next year. So it could be a year from now before this is a commonly accepted method of payment. And they got hacked. And someone went and stole a bunch of their email address information. Which makes me really excited about handing over my social security number, my driver's license, and my bank account.
Yes. Now, in fairness to them, and I think we at 2A, we made some hay of this. I think everybody made some hay of this. In fairness to MCX, what was compromised was a mailing list for people who signed up because they were interested in knowing when the site launched. So this was presumably managed in an email marketing solution. It was not
right.
It was not an account list within their payment infrastructure of any shape or form.
But they did state that a lot of dummy accounts was most of what they got, so that it wasn't, they were trying to downplay the value of the information that had been stolen. And one of the things that they said it was a lot of dummy accounts for the pilot program stuff that they were doing.
Yeah.
So but that's special.
It was email addresses. Now, that's not good.
No.
But it's not necessarily as bad as all that. It's just what it is embarrassing.
It is super embarrassing. And it's even more embarrassing when members of this organization have disabled all manner of NFC payment entirely just so that they're not using Apple Pay because they've got this exclusive agreement. And they've made this exclusive agreement with a number of retailers. One of those retailers is Best Buy. Another one is a company you may have heard of called Walmart. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was the CEO of Walmart sometime last year, I think it was.
CFO, not CEO. CFO.
Oh, it was the CFO who said it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you knew where I was going with this.
Yeah.
He was asked specifically what he thought the odds were of this system succeeding, where you hook it straight up to your bank account. And he said, and, you know, they asked him basically point blank, will it work? And he said, I don't know if it'll work. This is his exact words. And I quote, I don't know if it will work. I don't care. I just want to see Visa hurt.
Yeah.
So explain the part I'm having really a hard time reconciling is that data point with the data point that, this is one of the larger players in an organization with customer in the name.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I think everyone who has taken a look at this has come away with the impression that that MCX and Currency is not a solution that is necessarily designed primarily for the customer.
No.
It is designed to get away from credit cards. It's how the retailers get away from credit cards, because
yes,
credit cards are expensive for retailers. They cost them actual money on every sale.
Yes, they do.
They hate that. And they've been trying to deal with that for years. Now, whether the idea of having everybody use debit cards or ACH, the automated clearinghouse,
mm-hmm,
essentially the network that handles checks.
Yeah.
Is what is behind Currency. Now, as you pointed out, any number of people pointed out, do you really want to connect these folks, the Targets and the Best Buys of the world, the people that are having their payment terminals hacked and all this credit card information and so on, do you really want to put your bank account in their hands? You could use a store-specific debit card or a gift card,
mm-hmm,
but that then defeats the purpose almost of having this
right.
virtual wallet because you've got to have 15 different cards in it to get anything.
And honestly, that's half the reason that I use a credit card for most of my transactions, because as soon as something funny happens, I call them up and I go, yeah, no. And they say, okay. And then it's avoided as if it never happened, and it is no longer my issue. Now, if it's the bank, you know, right. if I use my debit card that's hooked straight up to my bank account and something happens
there's no fraud protection there.
Right. And they're going to go, you know, gosh, it's a bummer. And the real problem is if you are somebody who doesn't have a lot of padding in your bank account. And I know people who don't have a whole lot of padding, or even better, you know, like transfer money. They have like a real bank account somewhere, and then they transfer money into the one with the debit card attached for the onesie twosie transactions or for automated right. bill pay or whatever.
I use Simple for that.
Yeah. So if you're that person and somebody goes, you know, you never have more than $500 in there, you spend $300 of it, and somebody else goes and racks up a $500 charge on that debit card because they got the number, you are now in overdraft hell, and good luck ever getting out ever.
Yeah. Well, and it's just fascinating that there are – Apple Pay is not perfect. Apple Pay – like I have transactions at Duane Reade or Walgreens. I have transactions at COSI, and at Duane Reade and Walgreens, I pay with Apple Pay, but I still have to do my little barcode swipe for my loyalty card.
Yeah.
At COSI, their loyalty card is also a gift card. It's a combined thing. So if I go to COSI and I buy a salad, as I do many days, I hand them both my COSI card, which they swipe, and which has no value on it. They're just swiping it because it's my loyalty card.
Mm-hmm.
And I also do the, and then I hand my, give them my credit card at the same time, which they, so it's, it takes longer.
Yeah.
But I still want the points.
Right.
At Chopped, they use the Level Up payment system. So Level Up is used by a bunch of different quick serve restaurants and other retailers, and that's just a barcode, but at least it's a barcode that is all like that. Again, that's the same thing. I have to launch the app, I have to find the app.
Mm-hmm.
Is it under Passbook? Where did I leave it? The same Starbucks, Chopped, all of them, I do use the app, but it's a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to have Apple Pay, the convenience of Apple Pay, plus the option, the opt-in for my loyalty card information to flow to the retailer.
Right.
But what I will say about Apple Pay is that it's freakishly simple.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where the degree to which it becomes reflexive is weird.
And it's quick.
I was in Duane Reade. I have a Duane Reade. I live in New York City. I have a Duane. Everyone in New York City has a Duane Reade, basically
thing on
in their
keys?
House.
Yeah, oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's sitting in their foyer. they're everywhere.
They are.
And it's our flavor of Walgreens. It's owned by Walgreens now. It was started as a New York chain, though.
Oh, okay.
Because, in fact, the original store was at Duane and Reade, downtown intersection or parallel streets, but whatever. So at Duane Reade, I walk in, I'm picking up prescriptions. So I swipe first my flexible spending card, my healthcare balance. Well, getting close to the end of the year, it's tapped out. So that didn't work. It's like, oh. And rather than pulling out another card, I pull out my phone and just hold my phone naturally with my thumb on the Touch ID. And, you know, I get a quick try again. I hold it again. And it's done.
Yep.
And it is, it's hard to express, number one, how quickly you build the muscle memory for that. And number two, how much tough stuff is happening there. And I so rarely buy into the, oh, Android had it first, you know, the droid breath reaction to looking at a new iOS device or a new iPhone and saying, oh, you know, those are all features that LG had 3 years ago. Yeah, well, you know, they didn't put them together right. Or the Motorola Atrix fingerprint reader is the classic example.
Yeah.
I actually have more than the usual amount of sympathy in this particular case for that position, because it is true that not what drove the infrastructure, but what made it possible for these retailers to start deploying and to have a story to tell around having these NFC enabled payment terminals for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
was Google Wallet and Softcard, two technologies which nobody is using. Nobody's mm-hmm. using. And to the point, this is truly baffling to me, and I know we're talking about this for a long time, but this is kind of amazing to me, and I've wanted to say this out loud for a while, and I haven't been able to do it. So, CVS and Rite Aid, which are the two sort of poster children for this situation, they have had their NFC payment terminals on in the stores, turned on, enabled, everything's fine.
Waiting for payment.
And they have had a contractual exclusivity requirement, which, by the way, the MCX guys who did their press conference, they tried so hard to wriggle out of saying this out loud that Business Week had to go back, or Business Insider had to go back and fact check them on it.
Yeah.
They said clearly that there's no fee for leaving MCX.
Right. There are no fines.
There's no fines. And MCX members, the merchants who are members of the exchange, they're free to accept Apple Pay. Well, yes, they're free to accept Apple Pay if they leave.
If they leave, yeah.
If they resign. However, if they do get dinged, they get fined if they are accepting other digital payment solutions during their two-year exclusivity period. So we don't know internally what the full reasoning was, but let's assume that Rite Aid and CVS are part of this consortium.
Right.
They would be hit with the exclusivity penalties.
Mm-hmm.
But for years, they've had these devices out there and nobody bothered. It was no big deal. Whatever. Sure. Fine. You've got the NFC. Nobody cares. Softcard's turned on. Google Wallet's turned on. It's fine. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why it's no problem? Because nobody was using it.
Right.
Suddenly, a million credit cards get activated on Apple Pay.
Here comes a pasty stampede.
That is almost as good as Breach Fatigue. No, Pasty Stampede is the first album from Breach Fatigue. Neckbeard Stampede. So yes,
because
the Pasty
Apple shined a light on this and was like, this is now with your iPhone, this is a thing that you can do. And well, yes, Google people, Android users have been able to, but we're never doing it in the kind of numbers that would make any sort of difference. I think what happened here is Apple Pay was what everybody was talking about. And so,
But that's not even the thing. It wasn't, they were talking about it. They announced it weeks earlier. They announced it. They talked about it. They said it's going to go with these new devices. Mm-hmm. They said everybody has to wait for 8.1. They then announced 8.1 is coming next week.
Started doing it.
But CVS and Rite Aid had weeks, months, possibly, to say, hey, you know what? We're in a bit of a pickle here. We might want to do something. There was a full 24-hour day that people were paying and
That's
using this
exactly.
and saying, hey, this works. And they were completely unprepared.
Yeah.
They did not see it coming. And that, to me, is the amazing thing, is that
Me too.
The fact that people are doing it and talking about it, it's like, hey, I can pay with my phone. You could have paid with your Galaxy a year ago.
Yeah.
You could have paid with any of these things.
Even
a year
two.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could have come in and done it. It was there. The NFC terminal was there. You could have done it. It wasn't until people with iPhones. What is it about the people with iPhones? The pasty stampede. That suddenly they're like, oh, crap.
Yes.
It's the pant load moment. It's like, ah, what's happened to us?
Yeah.
That, and it's amazing. Amazing to me.
I really, really, really wonder what happened with that. Just because, like you said, they were able to take those payments before. And not only were they able to take those payments before, but then when the 6 and 6 Plus were announced, they said, hey, by the way, here's the thing this phone can do. And still no action from either of these places. It took until somebody started ringing up purchases for them to go,
bingo,
oh, crap.
And tweeting about it. Because because someone's announced these phones will have payment technology embedded, their response was, yeah, nobody uses that. It's never going to be a thing. We know it's not going to be a thing. It's not a thing. Guess what? It's a thing now.
Oh boy, howdy, is it a thing?
And that to me is it is hilarious. And what's if they had just gotten ahead of it by a little bit, yeah, by a day,
yeah,
and turned them off or blocked it before people started using it, then it would just be like, oh, it doesn't work here. Yeah, that's what we were told, that it wouldn't work here. We knew that.
Yeah.
But no, they got in, they started using it. They're like, oh, it works here. Oh, crap, we have to turn it off. Well, see, now you've done it.
Yeah, that's
It's never the screw up. It's always the cover up. And now you've made it incredibly clear to us that you're not simply not participating in a technology. You're being actively customer hostile.
Yeah.
I brought up the devil's advocate argument at one point about Apple stores not accepting Google Wallet.
Yeah.
And the response was, yeah, but they never did. They never had NFC terminals. They never had the capability.
That's true.
It wasn't like they built it out and then deliberately said, psych, no payments for you, which is exactly what these companies get.
Right. And the thing to me that is sort of astounding about this is, you know, people are giving them heat for turning them off. And to me, it was a decision that was made by somebody who is trying to be in compliance with an agreement that they signed. And I don't have a problem with that. If they're trying to, maybe it was a flail on their part. Oh God, we got to do something. You know, what's that gif that goes around once in a while? We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. That's kind of how this sounded. And to me, the thing that was really sort of funny about it was that it was, you know, I didn't fault them for turning it off. I faulted them for turning it off after people had already proven it would work.
Yeah.
Like, if they had just, you know, when the 6 came out and everybody was like, I can't wait till I can pay with this, then maybe at that point somebody should have said, wait, what? No, we can't do that. You know, that's like against the rules of the thing. Yeah.
Get ahead of it.
Had opportunities. It's not like this wasn't an Amazon product. It came out with fanfare. It was a big deal. Not only the announcement, but the day it was finally available. Like,
I just got that. I just got the dig there. What do you mean? Amazon, the Fire Stick, by the way, shipping, I think, just for the next couple of days for $19.99 for Prime members, by the by.
Yeah, I'm on the edge. I have a Chromecast. Yeah, I have a Chromecast.
I just have the old-fashioned Plastercast.
Although, at $20, maybe we should replace the Roku box, which Mr. Kelly's review of the Roku after about 15 minutes of playing with the Roku 3 was, why didn't we just get another Apple TV? So
sensible chap, your husband.
So, yeah, he has his moments. I thought that was, to me, that was the astounding part, was exactly what you said. It's not that they don't accept it. It's that they did and then changed their mind, and then like all of the tap dance around that has been sort of entertaining.
Yeah. And I love, of course, your piece over your wonderfully titled piece over at the Mac Observer, the breach fatigue, how Apple Pay mitigates breach fatigue is a great read. But also, what I'm also finding interesting is Brian's piece there about Meijer, the Michigan, the Midwest grocery store chain, which has NFC terminals, has had them for a long time, has accepted Google Wallet for a long time.
Yeah.
I do legitimately believe there was a lot of confusion in the market, in the ecosystem, when Apple said, well, here are the vendors we're supporting, and Apple didn't say, you know, loudly, by the way, anywhere you see an NFC reader, it's going to work. Even if we don't explicitly say it's going to work, it's going to work. That is, I think, the one thing you can say to about the CVS and Rite Aid situation is, well, not everybody was sure it was going to work.
Right.
Even though
it was just people sort of going, hey, that looks like a thing I can wave my phone at. I'm going to wave my phone at it.
Well, I mean, if you were paying attention, if you read up on it, and it was clear well before it launched, yes, you can use it anywhere there's an NFC terminal.
Right.
So I think there were certainly a lot of consumers that do it. I think they're just maybe were not the, you know, the technology executives in every corner that had
certainly
thought that through. But anyway, this grocery store in Michigan, or this chain of grocery stores in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
They're a member of MCX.
Mm-hmm.
They have mobile payments that are already working. And yeah, they're cool with that.
Yeah.
Just whatever. It's fine. We're leaving it on. They said that we've had the technology to accept mobile wallets for several years. We don't plan to remove or disable these systems because we're not
dumb.
We're not freaky. We're not running around in circles screaming and shouting.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating. And it's not clear whether there's going to be a financial penalty for that.
Right. I wonder what their fallout's going to be.
Well, that does again put the whole Rite Aid and CVS thing in another light. It's like, well, are they really being penalized?
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out.
Did they just freak out?
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't expecting it. Fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating because it's the sort of, you so rarely get to see people do something that is so blatantly
tone deaf
would be the word.
But it is openly consumer hostile.
It's openly consumer hostile.
And the thing that's hilarious about it is when you look at it, if you really think through the stuff that they're trying to feed you on that front page at the MCX site, you can tell that you're like, yeah, no, this isn't good for me. This isn't good for me. This is good for Rite Aid. This isn't good for Kelly. And, you know, and as you sort of sort through the spin on their page about, you know, ease and convenience and on, it gets more obvious that this is not, you know, this is a great system for a merchant. This is not a great system for a consumer. And so I think it's funny to sort of see all of that. And the thing that has been the funniest to me about all of this is the moment of perspective, because you're really only talking about people who bought a phone in the last month,
mm-hmm.
that was one of two models that has only been available for a month,
mm-hmm.
not only buying that phone,
mm-hmm.
but then updating that phone to the latest operating system, and then having the idea that they could pay with that phone.
They could load a credit card into that phone.
That they could set
they
up.
They had to manually do that.
Yeah.
Yep.
They had to set up a bunch of information ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
and then they had to leave the house with it, and which is apparently a thing that people sometimes do, is leave the house without a phone, which I don't understand.
So
but
weird.
I know, but different strokes and all that. So people who have to leave the house with the phone after they have purchased it in the last month, updated the software, and configured it with at least one method of payment within Apple Pay. Once they have done so, they have to go to a place that accepts Apple Pay and then wave their phone around. This is not a whole heck of a lot of people at the moment. They're just loud.
There's a pretty steep barrier to entry, but think about that.
I mean, it's only going to get bigger. Like, make no mistake.
In a few weeks, that group of people that you described that would go through all those hurdles is as loud, if not as numerous, certainly as loud, and certainly as likely or more likely to actually use this
mm-hmm.
technology than the millions of people who downloaded Google Wallet
mm-hmm.
over a several year period. Now, those millions of people, most of them are probably on phones on carriers that have deliberately disabled the
right.
Google Wallet functionality.
Yeah.
But it would be hard to put together a more crowded Volkswagen full of clowns than this current scenario. I think you'd have to go back to the music industry circa, you know, 1998.
Yes.
To try to pull this together, because it's like everybody doing exactly what they believe is in their enlightened self-interest and managing to completely ignore the consumer experience.
Mm-hmm.
At all costs. It's the smallest, it is the least significant bit in any of these business decisions that these companies have made. And Apple, because Apple owns the stack, because Apple
yep.
controls the entire experience, can say, you know what? consumer experience is the most significant bit. It is the most important thing in this entire ecosystem.
And what happened before.
Right.
With the music people in 1998. Apple made it.
Movie.
Apple made it easier for me to buy a song from them for a dollar than it was to steal one. So I started buying songs from Apple.
We've seen this movie. We saw it with iTunes. We saw it with the iPod. We saw it with the iPhone, which, by the way, is now large enough to have a measurable, been for a while, large enough to have a measurable impact on United States GDP.
Yeah.
It is a measurable uptick when the new iPhone is launched. And you're looking at the complete, just rat king of everything that the carriers and the phone vendors and Google and Android itself and the credit card companies and everybody has done in mobile payments for the past decade. The only people doing it at all really successfully are Starbucks, which is a barcode based system, to be sure.
It's
a barcode that can only get to your Starbucks card, which you have to manually load. It cannot get to your bank account or your debit card or anything else. If someone steals your Starbucks card, really, I mean, you're going to be able to find them because they'll be the ones over by the side of the road shaking uncontrollably. But the point is that Apple now has something very similar to what happened with the iPhone launch, where everybody said, yeah, it's never going to work.
Here we are.
And as soon as it launched, as soon as that demo started, at RIM, at other companies, people are going, what do we do if this works?
Yeah.
What do we do? And the answer in some cases is put on a brave face. And in other cases, it's, you know, run in circles, scream and shout. But it's just so fascinating to watch the same movie again, but it never gets old somehow. Don't know why.
And the thing to me that is really interesting about this is, as a longtime Apple watcher, it's fascinating to me that this, like I said, relatively, in the grand scheme of things, relatively small group of people, have turned this into the thing that it is. You know, I think that that's kind of amusing. The other thing that was sort of funny and sad at the same time to me was Jeff Gamet talked about breaking in Apple Pay last week. And mm-hmm. he talked about going to the grocery store and he went and got some stuff so that he could try it out. And he wrote a really good piece about this, actually. And the reason that I pointed out is because the first thing he does is admit he was wrong, because he didn't think this was going to be a thing. And then he did it. And now he's like, oh my God. So, he went to pay and the cashier was like, oh cool, I haven't seen this yet. I want to know what happens. So, he waved his phone, paid, moved on. And the cashier was like, oh, I wish my phone could do that. I just have an Android phone. And,
oh wow.
Yeah. So like, I think part of Google Wallet's problem is, and you know, it's entirely possible that the phone may not, you know, like you said, the carrier may have disabled it, or maybe she's got a phone that just doesn't have NFC in it for some reason. I don't know how many Android phones actually do, but when you were talking about owning the stack, that's a really important distinction, because some Samsung phones have it and some don't. And, you know, some Motorola's have it and some don't. And it'll only work if you have this particular, you know, a model from this point forward, because it's capable of running this software, which was the first time it recognized the NFC chip. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and on and on. So it's entirely possible that a lot of people have Google Wallet and just don't know capability to use Google Wallet, but have no clue that that's a thing that they could do. And I'll tell you what. I know the Starbucks thing is a bit convoluted compared to Apple Pay, but when that dropped in like 2011, mm-hmm. maybe, because Steve Sandy recorded me at Starbucks buying coffee at Macworld so we could try it out, it felt like I lived in the future. And one day I really wanted a cup of coffee. I was going to go and Starbucks had like a deal on a breakfast sandwich or something. I was like, I'll go treat myself to some breakfast. Walked out of the house, had my keys, had my phone, didn't have my purse, had no wallet, had no currency, didn't realize it until I was in line with a car behind me at Starbucks, went for my wallet and went, oh, crap, what do I do? Had already ordered and was like, okay, now I'm going to pay. Oh, no. Pulled out my phone and the cashier didn't even flinch, gets the little gun, scans my phone, says, awesome, here you go. Hands me my coffee, hands me my breakfast sandwich, and I moved on with my life, and I felt like I lived in the future. And the one thing that you can say many things about Starbucks, but I'll tell you where they really stand out as a business, and that is how ridiculously easy it is to give them money. Mm-hmm. It is a piece of cake within the app for me to drop another $25 on my card. It is easy for me within the app to check a box and say, if my balance ever drops below this number, automatically put this much more upon my card. They make it a piece of cake for me to send my mom Starbucks. My mom likes to get a Frappuccino. I don't remember which one. She likes a Frappuccino. So I can go on Facebook and I can send her a Frappuccino. And all she has to do is show something on her phone when she goes to Starbucks and they will give her one for free. And it'll just, you know, I will have already paid the amount. And it's amazing how many possible ways I can do something which ends up costing me money that ends up going to Starbucks. There are a whole lot of them. They have made it that easy for me to get their coffee, and as a result, I get their coffee sometimes. So, you know, this is the thing that for me is the utter failing in all of the Rite Aid and CVS stuff, is you are making it harder for me to give you money. And the thing that is astounding to me about this is, first of all, that they signed an exclusivity agreement. Now, I know it was 2012 when Apple wasn't really, you know,
There wasn't even a thing. I mean,
yeah, we weren't even hearing rumblings of, wouldn't it be awesome to pay with your phone, you know, from anybody when they signed these agreements a couple of years ago.
Oh, we were hearing we want it to happen. You know, when is the iPhone going to get NFC? You know,
that's true.
My Nexus A, you know, print symbol definitely has it.
Yeah. So, to me, it's been, you know, like, I understand that it was exclusive at the time, but it seems to me like it would be a really short-sighted move to sign an exclusivity agreement on any sort of payment method, because I don't know, in the day and age of Square and whatever the Quicken payment system is and the PayPal system
and Flint and the other ones
of all of those systems, it confuses me how anybody can be a viable business that only takes one form of payment. It doesn't mean you have to accept credit cards, but, you know, everybody takes cash and checks or cash and Visa, or, you know, maybe their two forms of payment are Visa and MasterCard. You know, whatever it is, I have a hard time believing that you can be a business that says unequivocally denial to an entire method of payment. And so to me, that's the thing that's really interesting.
Well, and now, looking at some subsequent reports, the CEO of MCX did, whose name is, I swear to you, Deckers Davidson. It's a villain name from Die Harder.
he's going to be the villain in Die Hard 6.
There's no fines. There's nothing in the structure that would have us fine the merchants. However, the news conference apparently only had written questions from reporters delivered in advance. They couldn't ask him any questions. His answers were incomplete. There were no follow-ups. But they clarified afterward, says that MCX retailers were allowed to use Apple Pay without suffering penalties. However, they will have to leave if they want to accept Apple Pay. So, yeah, you can do it, but you got to go.
Yeah.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So that makes the Miser thing even more interesting, because, you know, what is making them different?
Yeah. How we're are taking they doing both. That? Come at me, bro. I'm waiting to see how this goes.
Come at me, bro. Last thing I want to talk about, because we've been talking about Apple Pay. Apple Pay is endlessly fascinating. And again,
it fascinates you for a very particular reason.
Well, it does. And it is a very, as you said, a very small subset of a very small subset of a corner of an enigma that's actually even able to take advantage of this. And I am one of those people.
I know.
Surprise, much to my surprise, because I did get assigned, given, assigned, handed off to an iPhone 6 Plus.
Okay.
By my day job. So I am now toting the phone that when I have this, I've had this conversation easily 20 times. Is that the 6 Plus? Wow, that's gigantic. Same conversation every time. It is big. When I got it the first hour, I was constantly afraid I was going to throw it across the street because I would take it out of my pocket and the back was so slick that it felt like it was, and it's very light. I mean, obviously very light by comparison to its girth.
Yes.
And I felt like I couldn't get a grip on it. I have since placed it in a lovely Apple leather sheath, which the young man at the Apple store was kind enough to put on me. He put a leather sheath on me. It was awkward for a moment, but
I got into it.
He put the leather case on the phone, which means I was very happy he did it. I have no idea how to remove it because I didn't see him do it. I'll have to look online. But having the leather case on it actually gives it a lot of grippiness, and it feels very comfortable in my hand. I'm really able to use it.
Now, did you win or lose that resulted in you getting a 6 Plus?
I won that resulted in me getting a new phone immediately. I just didn't have a choice in what it was going to be.
Okay.
So everyone was like, congratulations, you're getting a newer refresh. Come and pick up your 6 Plus. I was like, and Rich, my brother, said, but if I only want the 6 Plus. Okay. It was a deliberate choice, and everybody's getting the 6 Pluses, which is great. It is just, I would say, for me, at my size and the size of my pants, the jeans that I'm wearing at this exact moment, it's a hair too large to be entirely comfortable. When I'm standing up, and actually even when I'm sitting down, it's fine. When I'm driving, I have to remember to take it out of my pocket before I start driving, because it's one of those things where, you know, what you shouldn't do, but you sometimes do, which is dig in your pocket for your phone while you're driving, just because you need to, something has to happen. You're stopped, you know, whatever, you're stopped safely at a red light. It's just ergonomically, that doesn't work.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, what also doesn't work is it doesn't fit in cup holders.
Really?
No, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit vertically in the cup holder. I need to get one of the seated lightning, you know, little pudgies to get in there. Where it does fit extraordinarily well, as I discovered this week, is if you pick up a car-to-go hourly smart car, one of the tiny half cars, which are now populating Brooklyn. And you drive it around and you need to navigate, the 6 Plus in the leather case tucks so neatly into the speedometer recess on that car right above the steering wheel. It's like it was meant to go there. It's like tucks right in. It's very casual. But as to the pants test, yes, it is a little big for my britches, unfortunately.
So apparently I'm from the future because I have that problem with my 5.
I think you are from the future.
So, well, I don't think it's. I want to think it's because I'm from the future. In real life, it's just because I wear pants that are made for girls, and we don't get anywhere near the pocket capacity that guys do.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but yeah. So there's that. It's kind of. I agree with you. It's kind of frustrating. I didn't realize it didn't fit in a cup holder. I guess I didn't realize it because. Mr. Kelly has a 6, but he puts it sideways. He has an Outback.
Yes.
And it fits. He has a lean and mean case on it. It's not the Apple case, but he has a little case on it. And it fits just in sort of that bottom pocket, just in front of the PowerPoint at the bottom. There's like a little cubby kind of there in the center console. Mm-hmm. And he can put it there and run everything from it. And while it's there and he has it plugged in, Hey Siri is flawless because it can totally hear him. And for him, it works pretty well. He kind of is in the investigatory process of seeing what is available that will hold up his phone, maybe a little higher so that it's closer to eye level. Because sometimes he needs the navigation and he would rather have it be more eye level so he can kind of see, glance down at what's next if he needs to, instead of waiting for Siri to tell him something. So
Yeah.
We're investigating that now. So, but it, that's why it didn't occur to me that it didn't fit a cup holder. So, interesting.
Yeah, it's been definitely a learning experience. I do love it. I think it's a gorgeous, gorgeous device. The screen is crazy. It's just crazy. And it's so huge. I'm waiting for some of my favorite apps to catch up with the new normal. But by and large, and I'm accidentally turning on Siri now. I have to say, this is the thing that has been wildest for me is this is the first phone I've owned with Touch ID. And mm-hmm. Touch ID is so wacky. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, forget that I can pay with it. The fact that it knows that it's me is nuts.
Yes. And I love that.
I first activated my thumb and then my other thumb, and then I found myself going to unlock it with my index fingers. Don't! You know, yep. I get it. It's totally one of those things where now knowing how cool it is and knowing it's on the two new iPads, it's like, oh, I get it. This is of course how we are going to interact with all our phones in the future. Now every time I go to my iPad and I have to put in my passcode, I was like
a caveman,
like some sort of primitive caveman. Exactly. Why it's so amazing how that happens. Like, oh, this is awesome. I've got a secure device and it's easy to use. I can read it. The screen is fantastic. And 2 days later, this thing that makes me type my password that doesn't read my fingerprints. And 4 years from now, it's going to be, oh, I have to touch it instead of just looking at it to unlock it. What is this thing?
Yep.
And then it's going to be, I have to look at it instead of just thinking about it. Yeah.
I got so used to it that, when I got my new iPad last year, I got my iPad and I got an iPad Air last year on my birthday, actually, middle of November. Mm-hmm. And my birthday's coming up for people who are interested.
good to know.
Or as I like to call it, Christmas in November. and it's a big one this year, but I'm not going to tell you guys which one because I'm still having a hard time admitting it to myself. Anyway, I got an iPad last year, an iPad Air.
Yep.
And it was white. So the face was white. So it matched my phone, which was white. And I found myself constantly sticking my thumb on it and waiting and going, why don't you? Oh, yeah. It was like all the time. And then my 4S went to Mr. Kelly for a while and I did the same thing there. He would be like, oh, it's on my phone, or I'd have to pick up his phone for something. And I'd pick it up and I'd stick my thumb on the front and wait and then be like, why does it? Oh, yeah. And it always felt like that moment when the power's out and you walk into a different room and you hit the light switch and you go, why doesn't the oh, yeah. It was like that moment. Like
looking for the rewind button on the remote. Why doesn't this go backwards?
Yep. Like all the time. Hmm. And I've gotten a little better about it. I've mostly figured it out, but I still every once in a while will pick up my iPad and I stick my thumb on it and go,
dang it.
Yeah.
Well, we and our thumbs, I think, need to call it a night.
We do indeed.
But it's wonderful to talk to you. Looking forward to talking to you again soon. And what do we want to tell people? I think we want to tell them thanks everybody for listening. There are more of you than there were before, which is awesome.
Hello and welcome. We look forward to your letters.
We're not talking about Dave Hamilton's pants as we did last time. So.
Maybe we should have. Maybe that was the secret with Dave. We did talk about Jeff Gamet's pants.
Yeah,
but that's a mythical object. So
it doesn't really exist.
Yeah, it's like a unicorn.
It's the rodents of unusual size. you can find us collectively at aftershowpodcast.com and on Twitter at @the_aftershow.
Yeah.
And we welcome your feedback. And you can find me at the Tuwa, TUAW.com, and also at Mike T. Rose.
And you can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. And you can find me explaining things, not necessarily to you. They may be things that you can file away and send to other people to whom you have to explain things over at macobserver.com and occasionally on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast.
Nicely done. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And Kelly, you want to take us out?
This has been the After Show with Mike and Kelly. It has been a wonderful time, and I can't wait till we get to talk to you again. Happy trails.